Paper 6, Section 3, which is old single column, page 75. Chugging along, might get to three digits here. okay, so a little bit more here on the nature of the nature of the sun. Let's see, I don't think we need any preface. Let's just jump right in and get into it here.
3, Ministry of the Father's Love. The Son shares the justice and righteousness of the Trinity, but overshadows these divinity traits by the infinite personalization of the Father's love and mercy. The Son is the revelation of divine love to the universes. As God is love, so the Son is mercy. The Son cannot love more than the Father, but he can show mercy to the creatures in one additional way, for not only is a primal creator like the Father, but he is also the eternal Son of that same Father, thereby sharing in the sonship experience of all other sons of the universal Father.
Okay, just pause to notice the construct of that. You know, if you're a new reader, you know, you might not pick up on it. But did you notice that that was not individuality viewpoint, really? That wasn't really bottom up, where we have universal Father, eternal Son, you know, say conjoint actor, infinite Spirit, and then the super additive consequences, the Trinity. Notice it was really the other way around. They started with the Trinity. So notice, you know, what they're doing subtly there for the, you know, more advanced reader to pick up on. They're reminding you of a, you know, of the top-down view, where you're really thinking you have it all together in one. You know, we know that, you know, this justice and righteousness of the Trinity is something that we're going to recognize in the Trinity, you know, in and of itself. But think about that. We have it all together. And we're going to pull out 3 aspects that are of that deity that's personalizable, you know, and have the 3 infinite persons, universal Father, the eternal Son, and the infinite Spirit. You know, so they're saying, you know, think about it like that. I mean, if they're coming from that commonality, the core of that commonality, you know, which remains after that separation and of the 3, you know, out of that, of the 3 persons, you know, if that commonality core has justice and righteousness, then I mean that the essence of that justice and righteousness is within all 3 persons. Okay. But there's some additional face that's being put forward. So relative to one of those faces, you know, that's sort of behind them, you know. Underpinning their nature is that justice and righteousness of the Trinity. Actually, here I will break this up. Remember what we, you know, come to recognize too about the Trinity. You know, the Paradise Trinity is the one side of the universal one of infinity. The other side is the first center, the root of the Father. So, you know, think a little more precisely about how this works. I mean, when those 3 separate elements are drawn out of that common total starting point, one of those elements remains directly connected, however, to the Paradise Trinity, the root of the Father. The first center, you know, is directly in relationship to the Trinity still. So when you're thinking about just, you know, these 2, the universal Father and the eternal Son, when you're thinking about them being separated out, who's the most separated out? The Father or the Son?
The Son.
Right. You know, because the Father is, you know, is still really in contact. Okay, see, that's the picture they're painting there. They're saying, okay, so you imagine this foundation of justice and righteousness, and you're drawing out the Father, and then you draw out the Son. Okay, and so, you know, many times they're going to point out, in many ways, you know, when you've seen the Son, you've seen the Father. Just like, you know, to a degree, you've seen the Trinity, like they're pointing out there. You know, this behind them, you know, in a sense, shining through them, you know, is justice and righteousness and some of the Father likeness. But the Son separates out and is able to achieve something that the Father can't because of that additional separation from that foundation. You know, really, it's not so much the Trinity as the original, you know, that universal one of infinity. That's what we're really envisioning as being separated from to increasing degrees. Okay, so the Son cannot love more than the Father, but he can show mercy to creatures in one additional way, because that additional extension away from the original. Okay, so that's, you know, it really is that very much that top-down view that they're speaking in there. Yeah, so that whole bit, the fact that, you know, there's no way for the Father to express Son character. Father's not a Son. You know, so they're just trying, you know, and just that process. I mean, you can see why the Father Son, you know, picture works so well. You know, Father rise to Son, okay? Original to Father to Son.
The Son, the eternal Son, shares sonship with all of us.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, so yeah. That's how he can be more merciful to us, more closer to us, actually, than the Father in some way.
All we're doing is just recognizing that the way that's accomplished, in order to have that kind of similarity to us, there has to be that additional separation from the original. And finally, after two steps, you get, you know, something that is in many ways a lot closer to us than the Father.
Really, to express the ministry of the Father's love, is they really have to connect it with the eternal Son.
But yeah, I mean, you'll see as we go forward, we're going to talk a lot about, you know, what's the point. But I just wanted you to notice there in their intro, you know, which orientation is it, bottom up or a top down orientation?
The eternal Son is the great mercy minister to all creation. Mercy is the essence of the Son's spiritual character. The mandates of the eternal Son as they go forth over the spirit circuits of the second source and center are keyed in tones of mercy. To comprehend the love of the eternal Son, you must first perceive its divine source, the Father, who is love. And then behold the unfolding of this infinite affection in the far-flung ministry of the infinite Spirit and his almost limitless host of ministering personalities. The ministry of the Eternal Son is devoted to the revelation of the God of love to the universe of universes. This divine Son is not engaged in the ignoble task of trying to persuade his gracious Father to love his lowly creatures and to show mercy to the wrongdoers of time. How wrong to envision the Eternal Son as appealing to the Universal Father to show mercy to his lowly creatures on the material worlds of space. Such concepts of God are crude and grotesque. Rather, should you realize that all the merciful ministrations of the sons of God are a direct revelation of the Father's heart of universal love and infinite compassion. The Father's love is the real and eternal source of the Son's mercy.
Okay, so see where they're starting to go with this relationship. And notice the title again, The Ministry of the Father's Love. How does that happen? How does the Father's love get ministered? That's obviously the point of the section. But there it is. I mean, the divine counselor felt the need to immediately, you know, as soon as we started talking about this son-like ministry, to directly confront the atonement doctrine. not make sure that you understand that not only did the Creator Son, you know, in his seventh soul, not function in that atonement mode, the source of the Creator Son, the Eternal Son, does not embody that in his nature in any way, shape, or form, period. You know, there is no such phenomenon. There is, you know, because there is no source for such a thing doesn't exist. Let the full logic of that we now have an eternal Son rather than just an artificial construct of the Trinity, you know, a so-called Trinity, in the full power of that eternal infinite person, there is no, you know, atonement notion.
You put this, give this to some people who come from a Christian background, it's very combative to them, you know, and I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, certainly...
Well, we can, I mean, why would you be giving it to them if they're not asking for revelation?
Right, right.
You know, right. I mean, this sort of thing should bring the point home clearly to you. If you recognize that this is a revelation, the only one that that you should be seeking to make aware of the revelation is someone who's interested in revelation.
Yeah.
Someone who's interested, has the courage to have all of their preconceived opinions, settled ideas, and long-standing prejudices fully confronted in full conflict.
Can we say it to them that way?
No. You say it that way, you say it definitively that way to yourself. So you don't have some delusion that you're some magical being that's going to go out and reveal to those who are not seeking revelation. And it starts with you recognizing, you know, do I actually relate to this as a revelation or as an affirmation? Do I read this book because I long to have it, you know, challenge my longest held immature beliefs and shred them, you know, in the light of truth?
Can we quote you?
To just shred through them with a beam of radiant truth. I mean, do you desire that? You have to desire that.
Those are the people we should be
looking
for.
Because that's what that light of truth, if you will allow it in, it cuts through all that. You know? If you don't want that to happen, if you recognize that, if you allow it in, you know what it's going to do to you. It's going to reform you. Well, then turn away. Because that's what it's about. And, you know, and if you've taken that on, then you know who you're looking for, you know?
Yeah.
You're not trying to club anyone over the head with your beliefs,
right,
you know, because they're superior to their beliefs. I mean, that's juvenile thinking. You know, you're going to be gentle and gracious and wise, and you're going to be searching for someone who has courageous and independent cosmic thinking, but needs the revelation.
Right.
You know, they're seeking.
They're asking for
the light,
mm-hmm,
of clarification. You know, they're not interested in all their old ways of thinking. They're not satisfied with their current answers anymore. They want revelation. And they don't want affirmation.
And that's totally true, because so many Urantia book readers I'm learning are still hanging on to the Bible with everything, all their might.
Or anything else that you're still hanging on to. Because nothing in the world is worth hanging on to. To think that, you know, the acts and manifestations of man are worthy to hang on to. In contrast to God, and that's humanism. You know, which do you put first, man or God? Are you still in that mode where you don't really see the need for God. Who needs God when there's the glory of man? Look what man has wrought. You know, is he not transcendently brilliant and capable of all kinds of incredible deeds of technology? Who needs God? God is for the weak. Okay. I mean, if you know, and you may not think that definitively, but seek for the threads of that subtle sophistry that's been woven into the world. You know, we all have been immersed in that since the day we were born. You know? And you have to aggressively take it on. I'm not going to put a man, any man, before God. There is no man that stands before God in my life. God is first. I'm following what Jesus told me to do. Seek first the kingdom of heaven. You know, not the kingdom of some man. You know, and there's some glorious temples, you know, that man has constructed that are alluring and, you know, and draw many in. And they're a complete lifestyle solution. You know, they give you everything that you're animal origin self could ever want. You know? But what about the person? You know, that stuff gives the person nothing. Only God can give the person what the person needs.
You know? Chris. Yep. So there's the New Age kind of people that are very spiritual, but they kind of think of Jesus as just another one of the enlightened beings.
Now, the challenge, of course, the more you get into the book, the more you'll find that it's not just a book about spiritual, you know, things, about the inner life. It tries to challenge you in every way conceivable. Because that, you know, that, you know, if you want to call him a New Age sort of spiritual thinker, undoubtedly has some very strong held, you know, beliefs in some non-spiritual ism, or so they think it's a non-spiritual, you know, but of course every ism is a spiritual thing, you know, and that's where it can start to get difficult, you know. What about some political ism that they've identified with, or some economic ism, or some social ism, like socialism, or, you know, or whatever, You have to have the courage to take it all on, and you know, and if you're going to, you know, you need to recognize this when you're trying to quote unquote evangelize the revelation, that you're not just handing them something that will gently touch upon their inner life. You're handing them a 2,000-page tome that is a direct confrontation of every human ism we have. You know, and if they start reading the whole thing, you know, they're going to come across things that they don't want to hear. You know, so you, I mean, you're looking for someone who is ready to hear, you know, anything and everything. You know, doesn't say, well, you can talk about anything but my favorite human thing,
right,
you know, that I hold up above all others.
We know, Tale of two
fingers. Yeah. Right. Well, yeah, let's keep back. Let's get back to the sun.
Okay.
Meanwhile, back to the eternal sun.
Sure.
But just you know, I mean, it's not like he didn't want us to go off on that. I mean, he purposely put in that thing that just took on, you know, something that hits very close to home, you know, purposely. But you know, just remember, it's not just things like the atonement doctrine. It's not just theology. It's all other so-called ologies that aren't as logic as they need to be, logical as they need to be, that are you know, are going to challenge you here.
God is love. The Son is mercy. Mercy is applied love, the Father's love in action in the person of His eternal Son. The love of this eternal Son is likewise universal. As love is comprehended on a sex planet, the love of God is more comparable to the love of a father, while the love of the eternal Son is more like the affection of a mother. Crude indeed, are such illustrations, but I employ them in the hope of conveying to the human mind the thought that there is a difference, not in divine content, but in quality and technique of expression between the love of the Father and the love of the Son.
Okay, so what are they getting at? I mean, we all know we have the expression eternal mother, son. Well, let's see if we can build up to that. Okay, so God the Father is love. Okay, and we know that the Son is mercy, and mercy is applied love. Okay, so just think about that. Okay, so we have love. Now, how would you visualize going from just that thought of what love is to applied love? How did they start this whole thing out? With a reference to the beginning of the Gospel of John. And there's the thought God, God the Father,
and the Word.
And then the Word God, God the Son. From thought to word. You know, a sort of a universal thought to a specific word, focalizing, bringing that thought to a focus point. It has to be brought to a focus to be applied. You know, the universal thing is not, you know, it has to be brought to a point to be applied. Okay, so this is what they're bringing us. So you know, just notice the word that I had to use to really describe that. Bringing that universal thought to a focus, a focalization. See, that's the, because the eternal Son is not just the eternal Son. Because that existential deity has experiential deity added on to it. It has this the eternal Son has a focalizer ability. The eternal Son is the eternal mother Son. It's because of that nature that that the eternal Son can bring this love to an applied point. Okay, so that's what they're getting at. So you know, and they're saying, okay, it's a bit crude, but just reflect on just the difference between a father and a mother relating to their child. Is it not similar? Hence his, you know, attempt to invoke this. Who is more likely to be there, you know, at every moment, bringing the love actually to a literal hand grip on the child's hand? Right? Applying the love. The love of the Father is just as significant and there, but often he's not the immediate means of its application. The love gets applied more commonly through the mother to the child. That's why he's using this analogy, you know. And you know, he's saying, yeah, it's crude. You got to cut through a lot of things that might confuse you about it. But you can actually cut through all of the confusion and have it not be so crude and potentially, you know, distorted, you know, in getting you the meaning. Because, you know, if you've figured out what makes the eternal Son the eternal mother Son and how that's different than the universal Father in the first place, if you understand the origin of Father and Mother at the absolute level, it's easier to use the, you know, the analogy of going all the way down to a sex planet level, you know, a male and female mortal being level, and pulling the truth out of the relationship there. So that's what they're getting at. And we've already pointed out, it's all over in here, you know, you see the mother words. You know, he hasn't used the expression eternal mother son, but the mother words are all over in here, just like the top down coming from the Trinity point was in there. And of course, that's even more to the point. Where did that mother deity, you know, what's the root of that phenomenon that it's the mother deity that got added to that son type deity? You know, it's the Trinity. You know, it's another reason why he's invoked that top-down picture right from the beginning, so that the advanced reader sees is all there. You're thinking in this mode. You know it's not just the universal Father and the eternal Son in the picture, like it appears when you start with the seven absolutes of infinity. The Trinity is also in play, and that, you know, in the full light of total deity and understanding of how this works, you know, you see how this all fits in, why it's constructed this way, you know. And then just one last point. Again, the whole point is, in order for this love to be applied, I mean, for me to apply a pressure to the arm of this couch, I have to literally be intimate with the couch arm. Okay, I can't be often some transcendent domain, not able to be intimate with it. I have to somehow have an ability to be within, so that rubber can meet the road. You know, because the eternal Son is the eternal Mother Son, there, the eternal Son can express within in a way that the Father can't. Okay, so now we know that you know the way this initially manifests. You know, talk about bringing it to a focus point. But of course, it's an infinite number of focus points within the finite. You know, the spirit presence of the eternal Mother Son fills all of space, but every point of that presence is a focus point, a point of potential intimacy with you. You know, it's not some non-contactable, you know, literally totally transcendent thing that's something just floating above you. It's within and intimate. Every point is a contact point, just like every point is a contact point with the aisle, so that no matter where that automaton is, it's at a contact point of the aisle, and the center of its nature is the influence of the aisle. It's like they tell you, the aisle, the sun, they're parallel. Okay, so that's what they're already bringing in terms of the nature of the Son and how it ties to the ministry of the Father's love. It's because of the mother nature, of the eternal Mother Son, that there can be the ministry of the Father's love. It's one of the, you know, we're just about to start, you know, the next section here. Notice what it is. It's attributes. How did it go when we were back in the five papers on the Father? First, they told us about the nature of God the Father. And then they talked about the attributes of God the Father. What results from that nature? Look, they're doing the exact same thing. We started with the nature of the Eternal Son, and then we're going to go to the attributes. And I just want to see, it's very important to understand that this number three even doesn't have nature in the title. This is part of the nature of the Eternal Son. One of the, you know, things that the Eternal Son is the Eternal Mother Son, a fact that can minister the love of the Father because of that ubiquitous mother-like intimacy within, not without. You know, 1 foot of the second source and center is without, the existential deity. But there's another foot that's within, the experiential deity. Now, it's a very rarefied, transcendent, experiential nature, but it is experiential. I mean, it's so it's so rarefied that not even Havona natives can directly sort of engage it. But it is, it's the transcendent expression of experiential deity, along with the experiential deity that makes the infinite spirit the infinite mother spirit. Okay, so from nature now to attributes.
Attributes of the Eternal Son. The Eternal Son motivates the spirit level of cosmic reality. The spiritual power of the Son is absolute in relation to all universe actualities. He exercises perfect control over the interassociation of all the undifferentiated spirit energy and over all actualized spirit reality through his absolute grasp of spirit gravity. All pure, unfragmented spirit and all spiritual beings and values are responsive to the infinite drawing power of the primal Son of Paradise. And if the eternal future should witness the appearance of an unlimited universe, the spirit gravity and the spirit power of the original Son will be found wholly adequate for the spiritual control and effective administration of such a boundless creation. The Son is omnipotent only in the spiritual realm. In the eternal economy of universe administration, wasteful and needless repetition of function is never encountered. The deities are not given to useless duplication of universe ministry.
Okay. All right. So, attributes. Well, you know, remember, what's an attribute? Repeat it again. You know, an attribute is that which is, you know, you can understand as being a result of an aspect of the nature of something. As nature, fundamentally, which gives rise subsequently to attributes. So, for instance, one of the facts of the nature of the eternal Son is the eternal Son is the absolute spirit, capital A, capital S. Okay, because he's the absolute spirit, therefore, you have the first paragraph. Omnipotence is a consequence of that nature. You know, if he's the absolute spirit, then in the spiritual realm, like they say there at the beginning of the second paragraph, you know, he's omnipotent. He's the absolute anchor point of spirit gravity and all of the control of spirit, spirit controller. Do you remember how the paper on the attributes of the Father started out? What were the first attributes that they talked about in that paper? Those three omni words. Omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. Okay? I'll bet you we're going to do the same thing again, only now with the Son. You know? Of course we are. the Divine Counselor is following the same process. And just think about how understandable that is, the way he started that previous section, again, about the nature of the Son being, you know, he's starting with the original and going to the Father and then going to the Son, so that you have this unbroken expression. I mean, if there's omnipotence in the source, you know, that gets expressed in the Son as well. But it's modified a little bit because there's been another step. It's not this really unqualified omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience. You know, it's now qualified to spirit. You know, and qualified to energy on the other side is the Isle of Paradise, of course. You can always think about the immediate parallels. When they're talking about the Son, just flip it to the pattern and power side instead of the personality and spirit side, you know, and you have a parallel thing going on there. Yeah, Jason.
With the deities are not given to useless duplications of universe ministry. Right. Is there a connection with that?
Well, I'm just trying to see where how you're thinking about that. I mean, one way that you see an expression of that fact, this useless duplication, down at our level, is your personality is absolutely distinct from my personality. There's no overlap, and overlap would be a useless duplication. You definitely have a parallel there. And in terms of the compulsion, the coercion, if you think about, you know, the fact that there's not useless duplication, what there is this absolute trust instead. I mean, the point is not, well, I've got a bunch of marbles and they're all the same, and I'm just going to push, and, you know, maybe one of the marbles will do what I want it to do. The marbles being us. No, I mean, each marvel, you know, each individual is absolutely unique. It's not about trying to push them, and it's like, well, you know, with the sort of, well, you know, if you don't do it, you know, Jeanette's going to do it. No, I mean, Jeanette can't do it. Jeanette's personality is absolutely different than yours. And there's no rush. We have eternity. The point is, here is this absolutely unique pattern put into eternity so that it can express. And, you know, the Father is infinitely patient, so there's no pushing. So there's omnipotence. And, yeah, you can see the first, you know, line of the next paragraph where we're going next.
The omnipresence of the original Son constitutes the spiritual unity of the universe of universes. The spiritual cohesion of all creation rests upon the everywhere active presence of the divine spirit of the eternal Son. When we conceive of the Father's spiritual presence, we find it difficult to differentiate it in our thinking from the spiritual presence of the eternal Son. The spirit of the Father is eternally resident in the spirit of the Son. The Father must be spiritually omnipresent, but such omnipresence appears to be inseparable from the everywhere spirit activities of the eternal Son. We do, however, believe that in all situations of Father-Son presence of a dual spiritual nature, the spirit of the Son is coordinate with the spirit of the Father.
Okay. See the word there at the end? So, what is allowing the Son and the Father to be working hand in hand here? A coordination. See, it's fundamentally the mother aspect of the Son that makes this possible. You know, they're talking about that literal spirit presence of the eternal mother Son. And think about the way they're talking about it here. They're saying when we try to analyze this, we just can't really see any distinction. Okay. Do you remember now when we were first talking about the nature of the Father, and remember that section where they brought up the Father being a universal spirit, the notion of the Father being a universal spirit, and remember what we noticed that. Immediately preceding that section, they were leading us up to the recognition. You know, they have a paragraph talking about the universal creator aspect of the Father. And then they have a subsequent paragraph talking about the universal controller aspect of the Father. Well, here, let's just bring this up for a second. You don't remember the order in your head. You know, they're starting this paper on the Father, and they're going forward, and they're saying, you know, there's this one aspect of the Father, the universal creator. And you keep going, then there's the universal controller. You know, and then the next thing is that section on it being a spirit, and that section opens up with talking about adjusters. We recognize they're just leading us around the circle here. You know, so after universal controller comes infinite upholder. You know, the adjusters are individuated out of that reservoir, the infinite upholder. You know, so remember that's you know that notion of the universal spirit of the Father is really in the infinite upholder aspect of the Father. And that's an extremely transcendent aspect. It's the mystery of mysteries that a fragment of it has any relationship to finite space and time at all. Just reminding you, it's not just a mystery, it's a mystery of mysteries. It's very transcendent. So think about this. You know, if... They're telling you that this whole bit about this spirit presence, you know, to literally think of that presence as being the mother aspect of the eternal mother son. Well, here's the eternal mother son, you know. So when we're in the cosmic mother column here, what's behind? It's not a direct presence within the finite. like the Eternal Mother Son's spirit presence is. But immediately behind that, and really inseparable from it, is this root of this whole downstep mother phenomenon, the infinite upholder. Okay. See, when you reflect on that foundation, see, of this downreaching mother, that first thing that really manifests out of that invisible foundation of the infinite upholder is that eternal mother, son, spirit presence. That's why it has this nature like they're talking about here, see. You know, it's the only place in the universe that we know of, the only place that, you know, that logically it seems that it's possible, where there's a slight variation on this. There's one place, Divinington. On Divinington, you engage the infinite upholder directly. And that's why no one goes there. You know, if you go back and read, you know, in your own time, go read the little thing on Divinington. Remember how each one of those Father's World starts out with this is a certain type of bosom? You know, and it says that's a unique bosom of the Father. That on Divinington, you know, we recently read about the bosom, you know, and we're talking about how, you know, the bosom of the Father here, I mean, how do we get connected to the Father? We don't connect directly like a paradise son does. And they say, but you know, have a connection to the bosom of the Father, the mother, you know, here. But there's one unique bosom of the Father. There's only one place where this top box is not grayed out and the words in italics and square brackets around it, okay? Just as a little reminder of the foundation. There's one place where you go where you literally are right there in intimate contact with the infinite upholder. That's on Divinington. That's a unique place. That's a unique bosom of the Father.
That's the home of the thought adjusters.
Right. Only, you know, and is that not logical? I mean, the thought adjusters are a fragment of that bosom, a fragment of that reservoir, of that infinite upholder. That's where that intimacy lies. That's the point, the only direct point of contact of the infinite upholder with things that we know about. Okay, the only point that isn't at the infinite level, in a sense. But of course, I mean, you could look at it the other way. In a sense, Divinington, to go to Divinington is to go to the infinite level. And you're a sub-infinite fact, period. You have no infinite dimension of your personality. You have an absolute dimension, but not an infinite one. And neither does any other, creature. No creatures go to Divinington. You know, no beings, no personalities go to Divinity, you know, except personalized adjusters, that's different. But, you know, it's just those Father fragments that are there, okay, in that unique bosom.
So if you went there, and if it was like us trying to go to paradise, like they tell us, that we wouldn't even know we were there, why do they tell everybody not to land there?
I mean, you notice that it's not just... it's not like the zones on the other worlds where, they basically say, you know, I mean, there's nothing for you there. I mean, it seems to be a little bit stronger. Yeah. And the most immediate way to think about a possible understanding of that is to remind yourself of the nature of the adjuster. Is the nature just a pure spirit fact? So that if you went there, you know, and you're just a lumping energy fact and there's no going to be no relationship to that spirit, and so, you know, you wouldn't have any experiences. No, it's also pure energy. Most likely, it's not just an off limits because of secrets, you know. to go there is to cease to be. You know, it would be a domain, you know, of pure energy as well. Talk about being embraced, you know, in a vibrating bosom. Okay, I mean, so yeah, it's likely, you know, that
I don't really want to go there. It's like that.
Right. You know, and that's another reason why, to remind you, why is it good that that the existential core of the adjuster has an experiential wrapping around it? You know, at least for any individual that has any possibility of getting close to it. You know, virgin adjusters are only given to those that have no possibility of getting very close to it. You need something, you need a buffer between you and that existential core. Is you can't handle that. No being can. No being can go to divinity.
That's why it gets dicey with people that get up in those higher psychic circles.
Or not so much getting to a higher psychic circle. That's bringing your whole nature, but having some sort of a flash moment where you reach up, you know, jump up briefly and get too close to the bug zapper. Yeah.
Chris, is there any other reason why we should know about this?
Well, I mean, kind of what we were just doing there. I mean, is how I was trying to bring it home a little bit. It all seems very abstract to talk about Divinington and all this sort of stuff. But, you know, remember what's going on in Divinington lives within you. And to understand the nature of that, you know, we've talked about this so much. You know, the revelators are quick to use the word danger when they're talking about this issue. You have eternity to draw closer to the adjuster. You know, go about it patiently. Wisely and eternally, you know, that patiently. You know, there's no rush. And just as a little reminder, you know, if you need something to temper your zeal a little bit, just remember the bug zapper. I mean, don't it's not using fear to control yourself. It's you're the master of it. But you're invoking that attention grabber. You know, when you're the master of the fear, you use it to focus your attention on the facts. Oh yeah, that's right. And just remember, you know, that something that's powerful enough to power to eternity is going to be too powerful in this life.
If we're going to get the same information there on the mansion worlds, why are we getting it now?
Because I mean, that's just taking it, I mean, you know, the purpose of the revelation. There's a philosophical emergency. It's not a small philosophical emergency. It's a holistic philosophical emergency. We need significant reformation of consciousness. You can't achieve that reformation of consciousness without the whole picture. The masters, the celestial masters behind this, you know, managed to distill the infinity that we need into 2,000 pages. You need the whole picture in order to be able to have the holistic reformation of consciousness that's going to help you with government, or help you with science, or you know, whatever, sociology, paleontology, so it's always remember that that's why you're taking the time to go through this, because you're trying to achieve a wholehearted reformation of mind, not just reforming some little nook of the temple within, but the whole thing. The whole thing is something that's pervaded by this fragment of the infinite upholder, you know, it takes a fragment of the infinite upholder to pervade the whole temple within. So how much of a reformation is it going to take of my consciousness to sync up with that whole fact? You know, it's a process of supplying the favorable conditions, having a mind that is stretching towards the horizons in every direction. Not just paleontology, but also the functionality of Divinington and everything else that you can think of. See?
Yeah.
It's not because there's a danger of landing on demand.
Right.
It's because it gives us something we wouldn't have otherwise.
Because, you know, just notice that all the mystery that Divinity is, but what did we just do? We just started thinking about it. We have the revelation has supplied us with a broadened perspective that actually allows us to start thinking about things that we're not going to experience until trillions of years in the future. You're never going to experience that, and yet you can start to think about it. You're beginning to have a consciousness that can embrace the whole picture of the master universe. Okay.
The word that came to my mind is buffer. So there are more buffers coming up. Just wait. Mm. Or be ready, right?
Because of the mercy of the sun? Yeah. Yeah. There's buffers aplenty. Yeah. Okay.
This revelation gives us the whole picture.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, just speaking to that point, I was trying to get there. I mean, that's how big an issue is in play. You know, we don't just need things revealed to the next notch, up to the local universe level. You know, remember, we've got it basically revealed to the constellation level because of, you know, up to Adam and Eve, and Melchizedek was just following on with that. And Jesus, in many ways, was kind of following on with that, too. You know, they didn't just take it one more notch, because we don't have a little issue. We've got a big issue in play. We need a big, big picture in order to be able to handle these big, big problems. And the problems are as big as they are because of what Michael did, basically. He blew all the doors down. He gave us the universal bestowal of the spirit of truth and thought adjusters, okay? Which means problems now can, you know what the spirit of truth influence does. It short circuits the normal time processes. So instead of us going to hell in a handbasket, you know, in a thousand years, we can go to hell in a handbasket in 10 minutes now. Okay? I mean, that's the negative side of putting an accelerant, you know. An accelerant plus ignorance equals potential problem. Okay?
That's what happened when he was on the planet. As soon as people came face to face with him, it was almost judgment day.
I mean, he just blew the moment of, you know, I mean, like he said, I mean, I come not to bring you together, but to rip things apart. I mean, I'm an accelerant. You know, if you're veering to the negative, you're going to go faster to the negative. If you're veering to the positive, you're going to go faster to the positive. So start choosing wisely, because I'm going to turn it on. Take delight in cultivating. All right.
In his contact with personality, the Father acts in the personality circuit. In his personal and detectable contact with spiritual creation, he appears in the fragments of the totality of his deity, and these Father fragments have a solitary, unique, and exclusive function wherever and whenever they appear in the universes. In all such situations, the spirit of the Son is coordinate with the spiritual function of the fragmented presence of the universal Father.
Okay, I just want to stress it one more time. You know, as they're saying that, were you thinking in this picture? Remember what this chart is about. The psychic circles and the sevenfold. You know, recognizing the parallel. You know, they're talking about the adjusters and how the sun is coordinate with that adjuster phenomenon. You can see that very directly. You know, when you think about moving up these levels of the cosmic mothers, you're moving up the cosmic levels. You're moving inward in the psychic circles, okay? To fuse with your adjuster. This, you know, they're talking about this adjuster. If you're going to fuse with that fact to get to the zero psychic circle, you know, to fuse, to be on the line there with what the fragment is made out of, the infinite upholder, nature. To get there, you have to go through first circler. You have to go through a direct relationship with the Eternal Mother Son. The only way to the Father's fragment is through the Son. You can't get to fusion by skipping the first circle. You can't go from the second circle to fusion. You have to go through the first circle to get to fusion. The only way to the Father is through the Son. But it's not the existential fact of the Son. It's this experiential handout here. I mean, this is an experiential process of moving upward and inward in the psychic circles. See? And it's through having that first thread of relationship with that transcendent experiential nature that is the mother deity of the Eternal Mother Son that you get to that fusion. Okay? That's, I mean, you know, try to, you know, notice what they're doing. See, they're not just talking about the attributes of the Eternal Son. They're, in almost every paragraph, they're reminding you why this is relevant to you. This is all, I mean, so above, as above, so below. If this is the way it's constructed up there, then that's the way it's constructed in here too, you know, with the adjuster in your mind. It has to work exactly the same way. Because there's only one reality. So once you understand the physics, you know, the laws of this relationship, you understand the laws of this relationship. And sure enough, that's exactly what we figured out when we created this chart. That's what this chart is pointing out. Okay. A little more on omnipresence here.
Spiritually, the Eternal Son is omnipresent. The spirit of the Eternal Son is most certainly with you and around you, but not within you, and a part of you, like the mystery monitor. The indwelling Father fragment adjusts the human mind to progressively divine attitudes, whereupon such an ascending mind becomes increasingly responsive to the spiritual drawing power of the all-powerful spirit gravity circuit of the second source and center.
Okay. Now remember how we talked, I mentioned, you know, this is that he's paralleling the Father development here. Went from nature to attributes, and now we're going from nature to attributes. The indwelling Father fragment adjusts. The word adjusts occurs twice in the book. Once here, you can probably guess where it occurred before. Back in the attributes, it was italicized there. Remember how we pointed out, you know, sometimes when you italicize, you might want to like search for that word, and sure enough, it occurs one other place, a place that you'd like, you know, that you'd like to connect to what you just read. Okay, so you know, when you go back to it's page 47. It's, you know, in the attributes of God paper there in section 2. And it's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth paragraph. At the end of that paragraph, you probably, you'll recognize it, you know, when you see it. God adjusts with the mind of imperfection. Okay, so put these two things together. So here it's God adjusts with the mind of imperfection. And what we just read is the indwelling Father fragment adjusts the human mind. Ah, now we've got the whole picture. Okay, see, the first step is, from the infinite level, the Father reaches down, adjusts a measure of himself to come into relationship with. You notice, very, you know, remember we pointed that out at the time, that it said with, not to. So he adjusts with, he strikes step with, you. He reaches down, he adjusts a measure of himself just to you. Okay? And in response to that, you know, the moment he adjusts with you, guess what's going to happen to you? You know, he's the initiator, right? If he does that, he's initiating something. Then this sentence here, the other time the word adjusts occurs. That, you know, as soon as he adjusts with you, the Father fragment adjusts your mind so that eventually you can stand in his personal presence. Action, reaction. Okay? Initiator. And this is what he initiates. And eventually in you.
It sounds like when he's adjusting the mind, then he makes us more receptive to this spiritual gravity of the second source and center.
Right. Is that a correct interpretation? Yeah. So, you know, so remembering now, I mean, when we, you know, we often talk about, you know, how once you have an injustice, a spirit fragment within you, you literally have this spirit fragment that spirit gravity can grab a hold to you and start pulling you up to paradise. But just again, notice, you know, this is where they're explaining the details a little bit more. It's not as direct as you might have first visualized that. I mean, first of all, the Father is not the source of spirit gravity. The Son is. So that's the Son is one that's actually pulling you. So this whole process has got to be hand in hand, and that's of course just what they're revealing, that the, how coordinated this is, that the Father and the Mother, at that level, at that absolute level, are coordinating together to make this happen. Yeah.
I wasn't quite clear about that sentence. When it says it's not directly responsive to the universal Father.
Remember how, you know, we're in the process of developing this. You know, we just talked about we have the original, and we, you know, you draw out the Father, then we draw out the Son, and of course in parallel we're drawing out the universal controller and the aisle, so that you have the Son and the aisle, and then as a consequence of the relationship between those two things, you have the third source and center and the absolute mind that's directly connected to creature mind. You know, remember how removed mind is from the Father. I mean, first you have this one step of removal to get to the Son, and then parallel to get the aisle, and then subsequent to that you get mind. You know, literally the relationship, you know, that they're, right, like they're saying right here, whoops, gotta go back to that page, when they say that it's neither paradise monoda, in other words, it's not absolute matter, you know, nor paradise spirit. It's not absolute spirit. Those two things, the Father is directly connected to. You know, the universal Father is directly connected to the absolute spirit. The universal controller is directly connected to the absolute matter of the aisle. Okay, but the absolute mind is out in front of that. The Father only gets to that through the other two together. Okay, so I mean that's what they're referring to here. See that mind is not directly responsive to the universal Father; it's directly responsive to the absolute mind of the conjoint actor. Okay. The Father is certainly knows all about how this works, the physics of these two, you know, the personal and the power and how they come together. He knows all about that. So he can take a measure of that part of himself that's the most removed from the Father, from the Father's anchor. You know, again, remember, you know, you have the first center and the first source, the universal Father, universal creator, universal controller, and far out at the extremity, most removed from this anchor of the first source and center, that infinite upholder. He can take a measure of that most remote extension of his nature, which is, you know, you might guess might have some similarity. You know, we're talking about the absolute mind sort of in the on the absolute level. See, that's the part that's the most removed from his anchor. Okay, so he can take a measure of that extremity and adjust it with that. You know, he knows how that works. He, you know, and so he can strike step with it. But, you know, he's not mindal gravity in any way. That's directly grabbing a hold of the mind. Okay, so that's what they're getting at. Just with. So he adjusts with, and then you know, it adjusts us so that. You know, he's initiated something. Why? So that we might eventually stand in his personal presence.
Just caught my attention what we just read. The indwelling Father fragment adjusts the human mind to progressively divine attitudes.
Right. That's
be a saying, attitude equals altitude.
Yeah, well, right here. Here's the altitude.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
These are progressively divine attitudes. Seven circular, six circular.
It's your attitude. Your attitude adjusts whatever you're doing. We have that choice to adjust our, allow our attitude to be adjusted, really.
And, I mean, you have to allow that first little thread of your nature, you know, your attitude to be adjusted so that it can actually synchronize at this high an altitude, clear up at the altitude of the Eternal Mother Sun. That means you're a first circler. Yeah. This is obviously not some sort of a vast synchronization. This is just the first, tiniest little measure of synchronization at that highest level. Right, right. You know, and that's again why, you know, your whole nature doesn't instantly fuse, just the skin, you know, yeah. Quote unquote, just the surface. That one little thread fuses, okay? All the other threads are still hanging out here with some scaffolding under them, a material scaffolding or a Maranja scaffolding. Yeah, that one thread fuses, you know. No, no. It takes eternity. Well, I mean, even to get the, you know, the beginnings of it kind of all hanging on the spirit fragment, you know, it takes you getting all the way through the local universe. Maybe just as long as they brought up that thread analogy. That thread that is the first to fuse. You go, wow, I created a thread, you know, that could march out and drag the rest of me to fusion. No, you didn't. You're not a creator being. Where did that thread come from that you've taken delight in cultivating, you know, it having, you know, attaining a higher and higher altitude? Who put that thread in you with that potential to begin with?
Lightbringer?
The mother. Okay? The Holy Spirit, you know, the local universe mother gave you by grace alone. She gave you one initial thread of supremacy, encirclement in her circuit. Yeah, she's a supreme functioning fact. She encircuits you in her circuit. That means she's given you one initial thread of supremacy by grace. And before the universal soul of thought adjustment, before the soul of the spirit of truth, you can follow that thread of supremacy upward and inward. You can follow it upward and inward to this supreme level, a third circler. Okay. You know, and on you go from there, following it upward, you know, till you're getting this synchronization with the Eternal Mother Sun in a first circler, you know, and then diffusion. But even, you know, a good example, think before the bestowal of the Spirit of Truth. For instance, one of the ways that you could get an adjuster, if you made a certain type of supreme decision, you could get an adjuster. Or, you know, a separate thing. To get, you know, let's say you're still just a six circler, you could get your own personal pair of guardian angels if you make the supreme decision, you know, a supreme decision to become godlike. Okay, so this supreme decision thing, you know, having these really momentous consequences. How can you make a supreme decision? Is it because you're a supreme being? How is this even possible? How is it possible for a lowly blob of protoplasm like we are to make a supreme decision to touch the nature of the supreme? It's because there's this thread of supremacy that's within you. And instead of following it upward and inward, what if right where whatever level you're at, you just manage to have a transcendent context and you grabbed it directly? That's a supreme decision. grabbing that thread of supremacy that's been given to you by grace, by the local mother. She's threaded, you know, woven it into you, that thread. Okay? So it all starts oh so long ago. This is the thread. The only reason that you can fuse is because this coordinated effort between father and mother to give you what you need to make that a potential thing. The father gives you this gift of personality that's going to be directing the harmonization that takes you upward and inward. He's the initiator of that with his gift of personality. But the actual way to that is given to you by the mother. That thread, that initial thread, that is literally that what is going around her circuit, that initial encirclement in the Holy Spirit is that thread. Okay? And that was given to you by grace. Just like that initial measure of encirclement in the Father's personality circuit was by grace. Okay. This is what we want, like I've said so many times, this is what you're wanting to do. You're wanting to be able to understand this well enough, the picture they're giving you, that you can literally, draw analogies like that so that you can directly understand how this works. That there's not some magical wishful thinking that leads to a supreme decision. There has to be facts in place by grace that would make this possible, What are they? Do I know anything about them? Yeah, when you start putting the pieces together, yeah, I know all kinds of things about them. This is what they've been, now I understand what they've been talking about here. Okay, you got something there?
Yes, please. That spirit, capital spirit, bears witness, mm-hmm. in quotes, with your spirit, mm-hmm. end quotes, not to your spirit. Did you bring that up in the last half hour?
Well, yeah,
isn't that related to...
Yeah, right. I mean, just take note of how carefully they're trying to get us to think about prepositions. And there's a great example. They're literally, putting the preposition to the fore and, getting you to... But, even if they don't purposely point a finger at the preposition, notice the preposition. There's a huge difference, If up there where it's the italicized adjust, if that says God adjusts to... That's a totally different picture and will lead to nothing but distortion of the picture if you think to instead of with.
Is that like laughing at instead of laughing?
No, just laughing to? I mean, just reflect on it. I just hold that forth. Don't ever let this even two-letter words pass by. They're all significant to the understanding. Okay, let's read some more here.
The original son is universally and spiritually self-conscious. In wisdom, the son is the full equal of the father. In the realms of knowledge, omniscience, we cannot distinguish between the first and second sources. Like the father, the son knows all. He is never surprised by any universe event. He comprehends the end from the beginning. The Father and the Son really know the number and whereabouts of all the spirits and spiritualized beings in the universe of universes. Not only does the Son know all things by virtue of his own omnipresent spirit, but the Son, equally with the Father and the conjoined actor, is fully cognizant of the vast reflectivity intelligence of the Supreme Being, which intelligence is at all times aware of all things that transpire on all the worlds of the seven super universes. And there are other ways in which the Paradise Son is omniscient.
So just, there it is, just omnipotence and omnipresence and omniscience. And notice in every case, they're really stressing this picture that he started out with in the previous section. There's a nature that's flowing down. And some things remain the same, in the highest sense, but there may be a qualification. Like they're pointing out here, always this omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience of the Eternal Son is a purely spiritual omnipotence, omnipresence, and omniscience. You know, the presence of the eternal Mother Son is just a spirit presence. The presence of the conjoined actor is a spirit mind presence. But this, you know, but the, that's the infinite Mother Spirit. But yeah, when you talk about these two presences that you're syncing up with as a second and first circler. So just, it's very, very totally qualified, on the spiritual side with the eternal Son. I mean, that's really, you'll see he's about to say, and really that's all that can be said. I mean, if you understand those three notions with the Father, just qualify it to spirit and you understand the Son, and there's really not much else to say.
Self-consciousness is a thing that distinguishes us greatly. And I just wondered if you'd elaborate on that.
Well, again, just self-consciousness. Why do we have consciousness of ourself, of our animal origin self? Why do we have self-consciousness? Because there's a domain where that animal origin self resides and a domain above where potentially a personalized self can reside. More and more threads of that animal origin self can be personalized and can live in a temple within the upper domain of your mind. And from that higher vantage point, you can look down upon, that self. He's a person. Just like the eternal Son has a self. And then that self has been personalized. And that personal self has a consciousness of that basic self. Now, in the case of when you're talking about God and God the Son, the type of self is called the Son. That's the type of deity. And then you personalize that deity, you personalize that self as God the Son. Okay? So God the Son is conscious of the Son. The person is conscious of the deity nature. But notice the qualification, spiritually. Because it's a purely, the Son type deity has this pure, from our perspective, has this purely spiritual nature, self nature. So it's this purely spiritual self-consciousness.
The eternal Son, as a loving, merciful, and ministering spiritual personality, is holy and infinitely equal with the Universal Father, while in all those merciful and affectionate personal contacts with the ascendant beings of the lower realms, the Eternal Son is just as kind and considerate, just as patient and long-suffering, as are his paradise sons in the local universes who so frequently bestow themselves upon the evolutionary worlds of time.
Oh, well, maybe there's one other little thing I could throw in, he says, before I wrap this up. He starts out, he's like, he's just reminding, he's spiritually, a spiritual personality. Personal contacts here, is that spiritual personality? It's like, okay, yeah, I get that part. But remember what we've been doing, mercy is applied love, levels of meaning. Love on the sixth level, applied love, mercy on the fifth level. What's the fourth level? Love, mercy, kindness. What's the third level?
Patience.
Wow, and they're even in that order. See? With the ascended beings of the lower realms, the eternal Son is just as kind and consider it just as patient and long-suffering. And why did he throw those additional ones in there? I mean, like the first one is really cool to think about it, what he's doing. Not just saying kind, but kind and considerate. The literal meaning of considerate means with the stars. Okay, is this an objective, top-down kindness? You bet it is. Put yourself up the vantage point of the stars and look down with stars. Consider it. Okay? So it's an objective kindness. It's not the kind of kindness that you have first just, next fair, then patient, then kind. It's not that bottom up. He's getting to that fourth level of meaning from the top down. Love brought down to mercy, brought down to kindness, brought down to patience, you know, and the total time transcendence of this patience we're talking about, that the fundamental temperance of this patience, see, long suffering. Just, you know, by adding those, it makes sure that you're thinking about coming down the levels of meaning with the sun and not following yourself up the levels of meaning towards the sun. Yeah. They never miss an opportunity to throw the levels of meaning in. They're everywhere in the book. Love, mercy, they put them in order. Love, mercy, kindness, patience. Okay, and then the last thing, when all is said and done.
It's needless further to expatiate on the attributes of the eternal Son. With the exceptions noted, it is only necessary to study the spiritual attributes of God, the Father, to understand and correctly evaluate the attributes of God the Son.
Okay. So if you set aside all the non-spiritual attributes of the Father, just focus on, he who has seen the Son has seen the spiritual attributes of the Father. Yeah, they're one and the same. Okay.
That's why they devote a whole paper to the attributes of the Father.
Right.
Section right. The attributes of
because
the Son. Same for the other
right. Thing, right? It's like you understand this. All you need is just this little encouragement to how to qualify what you read about the Father. You know, don't think about the power stuff, okay? But the personality stuff, everything that we said about the Father, you can say about the Son. And you got to love it. Throwing in expatiate. There's no need to roam out into the details any further. That's what expatiate means, to roam out. To just invoke a literal, to use a word that has such a literal meaning like that, It's like, and you go, wait a minute. Yeah, that's kind of maybe the study group has been going here, hasn't it? We've been kind of roaming out and all, we get drifting off into all these details, And he's saying, it really isn't that complicated. You don't have to go wandering off, into the desert of your mind to try to figure this out. It's really pretty simple. Just focalize it. Bring the Father to a spirit focus and you've got the Son.
Our will adjusts with the Father. Because there's another one in paper one, section three, where it talks about how we adjust.
Just always thinking, that there's the will and there's the way, and there's the personality, and there's the selfhood. There's always this twofold consecration thing in play. The Father adjusts with, and you consecrate yourself to that.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you consecrate yourself, to that reciprocal phenomenon. Of moving up the psychic circles.
And the adjuster takes care of that, the mechanics of that communication.
Yeah, but just so much, thinking about that person, that will thing is the initiating thing. Right. It's not the process. It's the initiation of the process. The process requires a second consecration, a consecration of your mind to the universal harmony. You got this fragment of the harmony. The experiential nature of that adjuster, you've got the harmony without that you can recognize with your three cosmic intuitions, but just to help bring that to a focus, you've got a point of harmony within, so you can get this harmony thing. Consecrate, now that you've consecrated yourself to being with the Father, like you're saying, now ask yourself, why'd you do that? What's the point of this? The point is that you can now begin this process of consecrating your mind to take on ever higher levels of harmony.
The eternal Son is the Father's first thought, right?
The expression of the Father's first thought. Right. Father's expression. The Father's, or the Son's the word.
The eternal Son has a beginning, but
conceptually,
doesn't. Right.
Well, the Father, you can have, you know, you can start with the original and there's no Father.
The original?
Yeah, the original.
The Ion.
No, no. And the, that's,
the original.
The original is the universal one of infinity. And out of the universal one of infinity comes the Father and the Mother. You know, specifically out of the face of the original that is the first center comes the Father. Out of the face of the original that is the Paradise Trinity comes the Mother. Okay. You know, that, remember, I mean, that's the whole point of, that's how they start out the Supreme Papers. They say, if you're going to understand experiential deity, you can't just do it with the seven absolutes infinity picture. There's no place for experiential deity in that picture. That's an individuality viewpoint existential picture. Okay? If you're going to understand how this works, we need to have a different starting point than the seven absolutes. And they say, so you can kind of understand how our new starting point we're suggesting of the original, the actual, and the potential by taking the seven absolutes infinity notion that you've been playing with and kind of condensing it. Condense the three reservoirs into the potential. Condense the three absolute facts, the absolute matter, the absolute mind, and the absolute spirit. Condense that into the actual. And think about kind of condensing the Father notion. Instead of being the universal Father, try to condense it to some origin fact. And let's call it the original. That's what they start. They try to give you a fresh start, you know. And then, you know, all we've done in working through all the total deity is to put the pieces together with that. You know, exactly what is the original.
So what is the beginning point? Does it give a date on the eternal sun?
Yeah.
Does something that began before time have a date? When we're talking about these sequences, it's a logical sequence for understanding. But it's not a temporal sequence. All this is happening before time. But it's still, but you can still understand it as the original gives rise to the Father, and the Father gives rise to the Son, and along with the Isle, they together give rise to the Spirit.
Well, are there any of these beings that we could have a date tied to?
Yeah.
Which one?
I mean, the very first beings on the date record are the Ancients of Days. When you go to Paradise and you look up that record that actually has, when were you born? The very first ones that were born at time zero are the Ancients of Days.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah,
the Ancients of Days.
Yes. Okay, something quick.
It is needless further to expatiate.
Oh, just...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, in the sense of, I've just, don't making it complicated. And, God will take care of the details. You don't have to go wandering off endlessly into all the details. All right, so now, here, let's notice this next thing. So, back in the attributes, we did omnipresence and omnipotence and omniscience. And then they had a section, God's, God the Father's, God's limitlessness.
Oh, yeah.
Look what comes next here, the limitations of the Eternal Son. You want to read a little more?
The limitations of the Eternal Son. The Eternal Son does not personally function in the physical domains, nor does he function, except through the conjoined actor, in the levels of mind ministry to creature beings. But these qualifications do not in any manner otherwise limit the Eternal Son in the full and free exercise of all the divine attributes of spiritual omniscience, omnipresence, and omnipotence. The Eternal Son does not personally pervade the potentials of spirit inherent in the infinity of the Deity Absolute, but as these potentials become actual, they come within the all-powerful grasp of the spirit gravity circuit of the Son.
So just a little technical qualifier there. When we're talking about this spirit presence, the Eternal Mother Son, they're saying that is not, quote unquote, spirit potency. It's not the presence of the Deity Absolute. It's separate.
Personality is the exclusive gift of the Universal Father. The Eternal Son derives personality from the Father, But he does not, without the Father, bestow personality. The Son gives origin to a vast spirit host, but such derivations are not personalities. When the Son creates personalities, he does so in conjunction with the Father, or with the conjoint creator, who may act for the Father in such relationships. The Eternal Son is thus a co-creator of personalities, but he bestows personality upon no being and of himself alone, never creates personal beings. This limitation of action does not, however, deprive the Son of the ability to create any or all types of other than personal reality.
Shades of what worlds?
Oh,
No. You know, this whole bit of, you know, all these you know, things that he's, you know, entities that he's creating just in and of himself. You know, and this other than personal. The world of the Eternal Son. Exactly. Yeah, remember about those? I mean, there's no personalities go there because no personalities are there. You know, it's just other than personal domain. Okay, you know, that's what they're alluding to between the lines there in terms of things that they've really revealed to us.
The Eternal Son is limited in transmittal of creator prerogatives. The Father, in eternalizing the original Son, bestowed upon him the power and privilege of subsequently joining with the Father in the divine act of producing additional sons possessing creative attributes, and this they have done and now do. But when these coordinate sons have been produced, the prerogatives of creatorship are apparently not further transmissible. The Eternal Son transmits creatorship powers only to the first or direct personalization. Therefore, when the Father and the Son unite to personalize a Creator Son, they achieve their purpose, but the Creator Son thus brought into existence is never able to transmit or delegate the prerogatives of creatorship to the various orders of sons which he may subsequently create, notwithstanding that in the highest local universe sons there does appear a very limited reflection of the creative attributes of a Creator Son.
Just a couple little things there. Just notice how coordinated everything is now. and I have to use that word to talk about coordinate, the word coordinate. Okay, I mean we've long recognized. I mean, if you're a longtime reader, you know them talking about the Creator Sons as coordinate sons. Okay. You know, and just now appreciate. See, that's a mother word, and you know that's why I try to point out. You know, when the Eternal Son is in that mode with the Father, giving rise to a Creator Son, these coordinate sons. You know, that's the universal Creator and the coordinate Creator acting together. You know, it's because the Eternal Son is the Eternal Mother Son, you know, and can be, you know, a universal mother to that universal Father, a coordinate Creator to that universal Creator. They can give rise to coordinate sons. You know, it's much more direct than just, you know, they're at this. They're also a creator, so they're at the same order. You know, they're with his order as a creator. I mean, yeah, it means that, but it's, you know, it's even more than that. You know, yeah, it's all this works together. That's the mastery of how they've used the language in the book like this. You know, once you kind of get how this works, it makes it so much easier to follow the bigger picture. You see coordinate. A mother action is involved somehow, in some way. Okay, and then just one little, you know, I mean, we don't want to delve into it right now because it's, you know, that's the domain of talking about the local universe sons and stuff, but that little allusion at the end there, you know, you talk about the highest local universe sons, you think of Gabriel and Father Melchizedek, and all that. Yeah, just a little tease there, you know, having these sort of a limited reflection of creative attributes. If you take Gabriel, Father Melchizedek, and Nambia, the first life carrier. Those three together are called the life-determining trio. And that life-determining, that's making me think about a limited reflection of creative attributes. Yeah, so that's one of the first things that might pop in your mind is you wonder about that. You know, and we all know there's Melchizedek life carriers. You know, so, it's those shades of really having some, at least limited, but fairly direct role in the whole life process that, should immediately come to mind when they mention that. Okay.
The eternal Son, as an infinite and exclusively personal being, cannot fragmentize his nature, cannot distribute and bestow individualized portions of his selfhood upon other entities or persons, as do the universal Father and the infinite Spirit. But the Son can and does bestow himself as an unlimited Spirit to bathe all creation and unceasingly draw all spirit personalities and spiritual realities to himself.
Notice the precision of what they're telling you there. Notice how when they started talking about the concept of the Son fragmenting, what word did they use? Individualized portions of his selfhood. Okay. Not a portion of God the Son. You take God the Son and break off a chunk of God the Son. Okay. Talking about his selfhood, the deity, the Son. Just that, to fragment and downstep a measure of that deity is not possible. Like you can take the infinite upholder, and take it, individuate a measure of that type of deity. You can't take the Son type deity and individuate it. How can you fundamentally understand why that makes sense? Why that wouldn't be possible? Why that would be, if you allowed that, you then would have an illogical picture that they were painting. What have they been repeating over and over again, italicizing it even, some purely spirit fact. The Son is a purely spirit fact. Spirit is it the individuality substance?
No.
It's the unity substance. He's purely unity-like. So you can't fragment it. That would be illogical. I mean, if he, in order to fragment it, it can't be purely unity-like. It has to have some individuality-likeness in it. Well, both the Spirit and the Father do. And the Isle is purely individuality-like. But the Son is purely, unity-like. So, just logically, you cannot fragment that. That would, then it wouldn't be unity-like, purely unity-like. Yeah. A fragment can have some measure of unity-likeness in it, but there has to also be some measure of individuality-likeness. I mean, there has to be some relationship directly back to the Isle, the absolute of individuality. An adjuster is individuated relative to the absolute of individuation, the Isle. There's an infinite separation between the Son and the Isle. All right, so, when they look for opportunities where when they tell you something, you don't just have to, I guess I got to just try to remember that and believe that. See if you can figure out why that is. And, that's just a real simple one. I mean, why, you could individuate the Spirit or the Father but not the Son.
Ever remember, the eternal Son is the personal portrayal of the Spirit Father to all creation. The Son is personal and nothing but personal in the deity sense. Such a divine and absolute personality cannot be disintegrated or fragmentized. God the Father and God the Spirit are truly personal, but they are also everything else in addition to being such deity personalities. Though the Eternal Son cannot personally participate in the bestowal of the thought adjusters, he did sit in council with the Universal Father in the eternal past, approving the plan and pledging endless cooperation. when the Father, in projecting the bestowal of the thought adjusters proposed to the Son, let us make mortal man in our own image. And as the spirit fragment of the Father dwells within you, so does the spirit presence of the Son envelop you, while these two forever work as one for your spiritual advancement.
So there it is again. I mean, you just could see that here, I hope. I mean, what they're talking about there. I mean, they have to work together. The only way to that fragment of the Father is through the Son, that enveloping spirit presence of the Son. When you're in sync with that enveloping spirit presence, what circler are you? First circler. Right. Yeah. And now nothing lies between you and the Father except the act of synchronizing, you know, with the Father.
All your attitudes and upward.
Yeah. First circle doesn't equal fusion. There's no fusion without the first.
Yeah. But it is in intimate contact, you know, like we're talking about. If you think about those circles literally with the rod of the adjuster, that first circler, there's no gap between the circumference of the rod and the circle you're on. You know, there, you know, you're intimately in contact, just as the Son is intimately in contact with the Father. You've synchronized with something that's in intimate contact with the Father. Now you're a first circler. You've synchronized with the spirit presence of the Eternal Mother Son on the sixth cosmic level. Yeah. So, I mean, that, there's a reason why. See, this is why they, you know, in the context of talking about the Son, they keep bringing up the thought adjusters. It's like, oh, I know about thought adjusters. This has something to do with me. Yeah, it's because of what we're talking about here, to get you to see that the more you understand about how this whole psychic circle thing and your relationship to the adjuster works, the more you understand the relationship between the Son and the Father, and vice versa.
In all of this plan, that lowly human beings are allowed the privilege of raising children.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody's botching it up so badly.
Or so it seems. Of course, it can't be so. Because if it was truly so, the father would be inadequate in some way. You know, the plan is perfect. Once you have enough spiritual consciousness to recognize the imperfections of parenting, just don't stop there. You know, that's just this, you know, the initial point of recognition. Follow upward. If you know that there's a perfect source of all things and beings, and here's a thing in front of you, and it's not perfect, how do you resolve that? You know, take these initial points of contrast like that as a motivation to seek a greater picture. You know, not to belabor the point, but the simplest reason for a long-standing problem, you know, you see the imperfect parenting, and then you say, well, you know, apparently God's initiation of this is imperfect. You've got God down here on the level of the imperfect parenting. And you have no time. You have them intimately in contact, so there's no time difference. I mean, that obviously what you need to do is you've got to get the Father up to the infinite level, put an infinite distance between what you're observing down here and the and its source point, and then you've got to put an eternity of time in between the two,
and adjust
the whole picture.
Yeah.
You know, and now it'll look very different once you. Once you contemplate this apparently imperfect parenting in the context of infinity and eternity, it won't look the same way anymore. Take the eyes of the Father on it. I mean, does the Father see imperfect parenting? No, the Father can't even see time. All the Father sees is three eternaliters, three three individuals in eternity. This apparent father, son, and child. He sees them in eternity, and they're absolutely perfect. At least co-absolutely perfect. So then the challenge, once you do that, is now you flip things all around. Oh, my challenge is to not see this as I see it. Oh, yeah. Jesus did always say I ought to try to do that. I should try to see it as the Father sees it, so that I can fundamentally see it differently. If I see it in the context of eternity, then I don't see it as so limited. I won't judge it for what it isn't. I'll judge it for what it is. I mean, and that's the whole point. Just to bring that full circle, that's what fundamentally all this process does when all is said and done, is it changes your mode of thinking, your mode of use of your spiritual consciousness, from something that detects the lack of perfection, to something that detects the presence of that which is perfecting. And that distinction changes the whole way you live your life in relationship to those things. No longer will you be howling at the moon and gnashing your teeth that there's so many imperfections. You won't see the imperfections anymore. You'll start to see it as the Father sees it. You'll see the goodness instead of the absence of goodness. You'll see the perfectingness of it. Now you've started to become the master of your spiritual nature instead of letting it take you away from the truth. The truth is not a universe that's black with a few white dots. But that's what your initial spiritual consciousness thinks. So is your initial spiritual consciousness divine? Hardly. It's diametrically opposite to the truth. The universe is white with a few black spots. That's the truth. Can you see that? Can you do more than just, I guess I'll have to just try to believe that? No, can you see that? If you can see that, then you'll never live your life the same again. Everything, all of your political activity, everything will change. You'll just see the whole world around you differently. You won't be approaching it as an immature, spiritually conscious person that sees lots of black and thinks it's a creator being and can fix it. It needs to do some, extreme thing to fix it maybe because it's really black and it's getting blacker. Okay, let's wrap it up here. So we've just about come full circle on the 2 hours here.
There might be other spirit influences, but our mind has it that there's only one spirit influence. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and in thinking about moving up those psychic circles, that last step from first circular diffusion is achieving a state where the Son and the Father become one. And then you fuse. But you have to get to that point where the distinction melts away, and then the gap will melt away. You'll fuse. To really transcend the bottom up viewpoint, to get from here to there, you're still in the presence of the spirit there, but you've gone from, I experienced the Son, but not the Father yet. Well, if you can get the two to come together as one, then you'll fuse. Yeah. So, you need to be coordinate, like the Son is coordinate with the Father, and then you can fuse. You have to have that same kind of relationship that the Son has to the Father. You have to have to the Father fragment, and then you'll fuse with it. Okay, let's take a moment here.